We've been discussing the landmark deal on subsidies that was struck by the World Trade Organization in Nairobi this weekend.
It does mean that into the future, no longer will meat or dairy or sugar or grains or wine or horticulture or cotton or many other things be confronted with other countries putting massive subsidies on their exports. So we'll have a level playing field. Australian farmers will be far more competitive. We'll keep markets that we otherwise would have lost. And it just generally puts us in a much, much stronger position than we've been for decades.
That's the Federal Trade Minister, Andrew Robb, hailing the global agreement to abolish farm subsidies as a watershed moment for Australian primary producers. What does it actually mean, though, for the people who grow food here? Is this the light at the end of the tunnel? Or hopefully not the end of the tunnel, but the light that they've been looking for? We've invited representatives of two groups touted as big potential winners from the pact on this morning. Dan Callahan is CEO of Cane Growers Australia. Dr. Cheryl Kellish-Gordon is Manager of Trade and Market Access at Grain Grower Organisation. Grain Growers, very good morning to both of you.
Morning, Hamish.
Dan, can I start with you? Cane Growers Australia said yesterday that on the surface this looks like it will be very significant. What do you think it is going to mean for your members?
Yeah, look, what it does is really firm up on two fronts what was already in play, particularly for the European economy, where the Europeans were looking to remove their export subsidies on sugar and all other products by 2017 anyway. There's no wiggle room for them now. That'll happen. For us, the other important market is India. The Indian picture isn't all that particularly clear still out of the agreement. Getting India to move and remove its export subsidies as a developing nation. In fact, they're putting a firm timeline on India to remove it, which is a significant positive for us, but that timeline is still stretching out to 2028. So still a long way to go before we'd see actual real economic impact there. But the European move firms up what we hoped was always going to be the case, but certainly it's a good global agreement.
It's not just export subsidies, though, that affect your sector. It's also other barriers that are placed at the other end in terms of trading with those countries, many of which remain in place. So how much of a difference do you think this actually will make? And what are the key kind of barriers to entry that you're still facing in terms of the markets you want to access?
Yeah, no, look, the much more, in the modern economy, I guess these export subsidies are a bit of a thing of the past, but they're always hanging over global trade deals is something that really should never have existed, but still did. But in actual fact, the real challenge for us is domestic subsidies to not for exporting sugar, but subsidies or tariffs applied to sugar coming in, because we export nearly 90% of the sugar we produce in Australia, 3.5 million tonnes of it, into a global market of only 80 million tonnes. And tariffs that are applied to our products going into countries, and rules applied to market access. And there's been a lot of media this year about the Trade Pacific Partnership deal, and we doubled our access to the US market, and that was very significant, but it was a very small volume in total still. So market access and removing tariffs on incoming product for us is a much bigger deal in terms of real economic impact.
Cheryl Kellish-Gordon, what's the impact for grain growers immediately?
Well, the first thing to say is having a meaningful deal come out of Nairobi is really important for all of agriculture across Australia. It maintains the relevance of WTO, and being one of the most liberalised agriculture nations in the world, we rely on the relevance of WTO more than most. And like sugar, grains is really trade exposed. So we have 70 to 75% of our wheat going internationally. We're at 2% of world production, but when it comes to wheat, we in terms of international trade, we fly up there at 15%. So we're really trade exposed. So any of these things that make trade more competitive are really important for our producers. The margins on international grain trade are incredibly thin. And so any small difference is actually a really big difference in directing trade our way. In terms of this actual package, there are a few elements to it other than the subsidies on export, as mentioned by Dan. There's more transparency on state trading enterprises. Now, that's pretty important for us when there are key STEs, as they're known, that trade in grain around the world. There's also some disciplines that have been applied to export credit programs, and that's particularly important for grains, particularly in North Asia. We see a lot of grain being traded into North Asia with very favourable credit extended over long periods, and that's supported by government programs. So it's really important that there are reductions in that. We see now, I think, that it's going to be only 18 months, those periods for those export credit
programs. So practically speaking, where does your attention turn now in terms of markets that you see with the most potential as a result of this pact? Are you looking at new markets, or are you simply looking at having greater access into existing markets?
You know what, it's actually not about greater access, and it's not about new markets.
Right, tell me what it is.
We trade against grain that is subsidised. We trade against grain that has much more efficient transport system. So 30% of our costs going internationally go on domestic transport. So, and we're also competing against grain that has government-supported marketing systems. So when we get to the international arena, our grain is up against the wall against a very, very competitive system that is supported by governments. What this does is it means that we are able to obtain a greater proportion of prices, because everybody else is actually now trading on a more level playing field. And over time, that means that perhaps you can get greater profits to see you through those lean times, for example, drought.
And Dan Galligan, what's your view of how this changes the way in which you trade immediately?
Oh, look, almost exactly the same as the grains industry has very well said, that it opens up the lines of transparency onto the market that Australian cane producers, just like grain producers, have been exposed to for decades, and other countries haven't been, and other producers haven't been. So I think The real message here is that there is still life in the WTO, to be honest.
Albeit not with a broad-based binding agreement, maybe sort of portioned up.
Yeah. I think what we're trying to do is breathe life into trade negotiations and try and get some momentum behind them. So if that does this, that's a good thing. Mm. And hopefully from a real economic perspective, it actually does open up that transparency so that we can see who we're competing against, because just like grain growers, cane farmers and sugar producers are really exposed fully to the world price, and we're competing against others that clearly are not, and in fact the majority of our competitors aren't. So at least if we can see what we're competing against, it puts us in a better position to try and find a better margin for producers.
Just taking a step back from this pact, where is the greatest growth potential for your sector? Is it Asia?
Yeah, for us it is. China and the Indonesian market, which are both very difficult markets to work with on for different reasons, but they're obviously the growing economies, and their growing population is, for us, producing and consuming sugar at almost double the rate of some of the more developed nations. India has still got strong potential, but it's a very, very large domestic industry in India, and it's a very complicated market that we're trying to work with there. But in Indonesia and China are certainly our most attractive. We'll still persist in trying to trade into the United States. They've got a huge deficit between consumption and domestic supply in the United States, so there's a huge opportunity for Australian producers there, but their current domestic protectionist policies make it extremely difficult for us to actually put more sugar in there at the moment.
And Cheryl Kalish-Gordon, is the picture that much the same for you for grain growers, or is there nuance there?
Look, the only real difference in the message would be North America isn't somewhere we even try to send any product. There might be a bit of niche grain going in there, but certainly it's not a target for us. Southeast Asia is our key area. You know, we've got a freight advantage into that part of the world. There's a really strongly growing population, and demand for wheat and grain-based products is growing in that area. But we absolutely don't forget about North Asia and our ongoing markets out of Korea and Japan. And then, of course, the Middle East is still a really important market for our Australian grain.
Dan, Cheryl, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
You're welcome, mate.
Thanks, Hamish.
Dan Galligan is CEO of Cane Growers Australia. Dr. Cheryl Kellish-Gordon is Manager of Trade and Market Access at Grain Producer Organisation. Grain Growers